This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycast.
I am woman, hear me roar, in numbers too big to ignore. Why don't you talk to me?
Good evening, my name is Sue and you're listening to Hear Me Roar, not Drive Time as was about 5 minutes ago. So I'm still here.
Are you that Sue?
I'm that Sue, I'm the same Sue. And the lovely David, David and I did drive for that last 2 hours.
Lovely man.
He's a lovely man.
And so is Rob Bellman. He's gorgeous.
Isn't he lovely?
Just did our news.
He just did our news and we made him laugh in the news and we're getting in trouble. And that lovely voice you can hear is the lovely Leanne, co-hosting with me tonight, and Nicola.
Howdy, guys. How's it going?
Good evening.
It's balmy. Balmy out there.
It's balmy in the studio as well. I thought we were getting more air con or something like that, but I'm feeling the heat in here.
You've got a jumper
maybe
on,
maybe
Nicola.
It's because you guys... It's not a jumper. It's a sweater vest.
Oh, sorry.
It's a sweater vest. It's a vest.
It's a sweater vest.
Your mum would be proud of you, darling.
Yes. She's probably wearing a singlet tucked into her undies after her dinner.
Have you been peeking?
Sorry about that. Now, later on tonight, we are talking to a whole range of people because it's Community Safety Week. We're talking to Gabby. She's the Acting Sergeant and Manager of the Gay and Lesbian Advisory Unit. We're also talking to Sergeant Di Ashrell. She's a Family Violence Advisor for Vic Police. And Karen Field from the Drummond Street Relationship Centre. So we're going to look into domestic violence, Leanne.
And, yeah, find out, I guess, what it is and what's happening, particularly in the GLBTI community, and what our police force and government plan to do about it.
Yeah, the stats are really interesting, and Gabby's always talking about, you know, reported crimes. So obviously the stats are just on the crimes that are reported. So it's interesting.
Yeah, I suppose if anyone wants to get involved at any point during the show, they can give us a wee call or email or text in. So the phone, of course, is 96992949. You can text in on 0427JOIN949 or, of course, email us onair@joy.org.au because it's going to be a very important discussion tonight.
Exactly, and we want to hear from people that are listening, their views, and perhaps anyone wants to share their experiences as well.
Yeah, and we have a lot of straight listeners as well, a lot of straight guys, which is really lovely to hear, and it's lovely to have you listening to us. It's nice that we're talking to everybody.
It is indeed. Now, I suppose we should delve into kind of the big news of the week coming out of the US, because they've actually finally managed to pass a bill giving LGBT people greater federal protection against hate crimes. Now, the interesting thing about this is that the bill's known as the Matthew Shepard Bill, after a gay teenager who was tortured and murdered in Wyoming in 1998 because of his sexuality. The bill actually passed 68 votes to 23 after they managed to attach it to a popular defence bill. So they had to actually staple it on, essentially, to a bill that loads of people wanted to get through to pass it. But it's so monumental because it's the first pro-gay legislation to pass in Congress since Stonewall.
My goodness.
It's amazing, isn't it? Do you think, though, that you know, that that's not all? You get, you know, you get knives and you get cans and you got whatever. It's a good...
I reckon they snuck it through. I reckon that half those people that voted for it didn't even know that it was in the end. I think it was one of those midnight jobs.
Yeah.
And they just went, oh, yeah, whatever.
Yeah, look, let's just go home and have
a
hamburger.
You know, we're not complaining about it, but it's not bringing the issues forward, is it?
No, but apparently at least President Barack Obama was known to be in favour of the bill. And that can only be a good thing. I mean, because it is the first one, maybe the tide is turning a little bit in America. I'd like to think it was. I mean, of course, it's too early to tell. But there seems to have been a few more positive stories coming out of there lately.
I think he's made some great changes. Do you think that the Don't Ask, Don't Tell will change? Do you think he will actually do something about it?
I wonder what Hillary will say, seeing as Bill was the one that brought it in, wasn't he?
Is it?
Wasn't it Bill Clinton that brought it in?
Yeah,
so it'd be interesting to see what Hillary stands on it. I think actually they've come out since then and said that it was wrong.
They've come out.
Well, guys, again. There's something we've been meaning to tell you.
That'd be great.
That'd be hilarious. But no, they've actually said, like, we might have been wrong on this, which is quite uncommon.
I want to know why. I'm always looking for a hidden agenda. I'm a bit of a... pessimist.
Oh, well, I don't know. He's got to get some runs on the board, the old Obama. And he got the Nobel Peace Prize, for God's sake.
And he was embarrassed and ashamed that he took it. He didn't realise, he didn't think that he deserved it, considering the people he was with.
Considering that there's a whole lot of American armies in countries around the world, you mean?
It's really interesting. So what else is happening?
Well, just over the border, if we take a wee flight across into Canada, it's kind of a multinational story, this one, because some Russian lesbians who were basically told they couldn't marry in Russia and caused a big legal storm because they were really fighting it, thought, aha, I've had an idea. We'll fly to Canada.
I've had an idea. Yeah. I've had a good idea.
With a Russian accent.
Can you tell my accent
no.
is Russian?
No, sorry.
Yeah.
No. But we tried.
they nipped across to Canada and got married there, because when they returned to Russia, there's actually a loophole in a treaty in Russia which guarantees the recognition of all overseas marriages without mentioning gender.
So they're going to test the loophole.
Clever ladies.
Go girls.
A couple of Irenas. Irina Fedotova-Fett and Irina Shipko.
That would be so confusing.
Oh, see, I was backing them until that. You just don't marry someone with the same name.
Irina Squared, they call them.
Because where are you going? I'm going Irene and Reince. It's just weird.
I wonder how it would go here, though, in Australia. I wonder if anyone... I'm sure people must have, like, got the little magnifying glass out to see if we could nip across to New Zealand, get married, and then fly back the next day and be like, ha-ha, we tricked you.
I know if you... With a British citizen, if you want to get married, you can actually get married in the British consulate here.
I can do that.
Good for you.
Yeah.
But it's still not recognised by the Australian. It's recognised by the British.
Well, it kind of gets to the point where my partner and I said, well, if we ever did it, there'd be no point going to the UK and coming back here to live. And, you know, no one recognises it in terms of the government. You know, there's nothing...
No, it's just a party.
You have to change your name to Irene, move to Russia and then go to Canada.
Well, yeah, at least Russia would recognise it.
And I have to say, the picture in MCV this week of the two Irenas are looking very gorgeous in their suits with their bow ties.
Aww.
Red and... White. One's got a bit of the touch of Ellen's about her.
She has a bit.
She's kind of cute.
She's got the bleach blonde thing. Good on you, girls. We're backing you the whole way. So I hope they continue that story and see how it goes.
Totally.
Tell us about your on-the-spot reporting.
Well, a couple of Thursdays ago, maybe even last Thursday. I can't remember. It all just blurs, really. I popped down to Docklands.
Popped
down to Docklands to one of those old sheds that's been done up gloriously.
They're amazing
to
now.
Go to the Diversity at Work Awards. Now, Diversity at Work is actually a firm that helps organisations with strategies to improve the diversity in the workplace, and there are 8 categories with the awards that cover mature workers, Indigenous, people with disability, women, and I think 2 years ago they introduced a GBLTI category.
Oh, right.
The winners, I had a chat with the two winning organisations for the small to medium size organisation. Port Phillip City Council won the award for the work that they're doing in their precinct. And as we know, Pride March is held in that area as well. But it's not just that. They work very closely with a number of organisations in there. So they were very, very happy to receive that award and get some recognition for the work that they're doing. And University of Western Australia won the large organisation award, because even before legislation in WA, they introduced what they called an ally program for all staff who wanted to go through some sort of awareness training about GLBTI issues so they could incorporate it in their coursework. And they've got little rainbow flaggy insignias on their doors to say, I've done the course. And when I spoke with Malcolm, he from WA, he said that a lesbian from Sydney moved as a lecturer over there, and she thought the flags all meant I'm a gay person, and she thought the whole uni was full of gay people.
Fantastic.
And she got very excited.
That's terrific.
Yeah, no, it's actually kind of funny, because it's a great bit of PR for Port Phillip, because I've just been looking at the different areas, and I live in Prahran, and I see Windsor's in here, and I'm really jealous. I don't see Stonington get any flaming awards for diversity and values.
Honey,
and
I live in the north. I've just got tofu and picket fences, so don't even go with the awards with me, okay?
Oh, if I moved a block down the road, I could have this awesome council.
And a flag.
And a flag.
And I guess the other thing about the awards is that the day will come, hopefully, that we don't have to have them.
Yes.
Because it'll be happening.
Yeah.
But they've been going for 9 or 10 years, and it was a very lovely night. And
good on you.
It was terrific.
And thanks for bringing that back.
Yep.
I think, is it time for a song? Or are we going to just have a little...
I don't know. We've got loads of other things we can talk about.
I want a little bit of a song.
You want some tunes?
Can we have a tune?
As soon as it's you.
Thank you, darling.
Diversity is Joy 94.9.
Good evening. My name is Sue, and you're listening to Hear Me Roar. Co-hosting with me tonight are Leanne and Nicola, and we have a studio full of people, don't we, Leanne?
Absolutely packed.
It's nice sharing a microphone with you.
Yeah, we should have cleaned your teeth there,
don't we? Sorry about that. Bit of spinach. As a part of Community Safety Week, we're talking to Gabby. She's the Acting Sergeant and Manager of the Gay and Lesbian Advisory Unit. Sergeant Di Ashwell, she's a Family Violence Advisor for Victoria Police and Karen Field from the Drubbin Street Relationship Centre. So we're talking all about domestic violence, what it is, what services are available within the GLBTI community.
So, Gabby, we're coming to the end of Community Safety Month. Can you tell us a bit about what the month is and what sort of issues are dealt with or highlighted during the month?
Well, it's a huge range of issues, but what we really focus on is issues that about people keeping themselves safe, making sure that we live in a safe community, and so not only looking after yourself but looking after each other. So with the GLBTI community, we've come on to Joy throughout the month and spoken about a number of issues, serious issues that we really need to discuss, including big one is bullying at school for young people. We spoke about that, and we've spoken about surviving sexual assault, something that's really not spoken about often enough, and too many victims of sexual assault and it's going unreported. And also we spoke about homophobic violence. So today we end our relationship with Joy with this show for Community Safety Month, talking about family violence in same-sex attracted families and transgender relationships.
So what are the kind of things that we're looking at? What are we facing when you're talking about domestic violence and family violence? Who would like to take that one on?
I can talk about that. So we're really looking at the definitions of family violence. We're looking at sort of behaviours that are coercive, threatening or controlling, and they can include physical assault, sexual assault, emotional abuse, psychological abuse, property damage. There's a lot of social isolation that occurs with the GLBTI community. And we can have stalking. So all of those cover sort of what family violence is made up of.
So, Di, is there any difference within the GLBTI community around family violence as compared to the broader community?
Look, there are certain issues that they tackle. It's also the way, from a referral agency, the way they deal with the GLBTI community. There's fear of being outed, but with the GLBTI community, so they do have different issues that they have to face and they have to tackle.
And what we find is that when you're in a same-sex relationship, especially when you're in the GLBTI community, we struggle for people to accept us and think that we are normal and accepted. So if we're in a relationship where maybe it's not as perfect as we would like, we often keep that hidden because we struggle with people actually thinking that we are normal enough to have a good relationship. And so we don't tell people about it. That's one of the reasons why we're not talking about it.
So do you think we actually overcompensate in a way and hide the nasties, and what's happening is all this stuff's being unreported?
I think in all relationships, when it comes to family violence, no one wants to talk about it. But then when you have the issues when you're in a same-sex attracted relationship, it becomes more so.
Karen, maybe from your point of view in terms of sort of more personal and individual sort of counselling side, I imagine that for men particularly, it would be difficult as the man who's the victim in this situation to admit, because it might be seen as a sign of weakness.
That's exactly right. And unfortunately, in some respects, the service system has been set up to deal with heterosexual family violence. And there's a real a lack of reporting, as we've all talked about. So services are set up to deal with victims who are predominantly women. So for a male to actually get the type of recovery services and the type of clinical services he needs, it's just not going to happen. So unfortunately, a lot of mainstream services have not done a lot of work around ensuring queer affirmative agency practice, training for clinicians, and the issues are quite different, and it's a lot harder to assess who is the victim and who's the abuser. So without a commitment to actually doing that training and doing that work, there's very, very few services.
And inside the community and outside the community, we find that there's a misunderstanding that if you're in a same-sex relationship that there can't really be violence. Can a man really assault a man and hurt him, and is that an offence? And can a woman hurt a woman? And of course they can, but inside the community we don't want to believe that, and as police and other services, we may not know how to treat that and how to act upon that.
I guess the other thing maybe we should define is just really what abuse is, because it's not necessarily physical. If it's not getting punched in the eye, there's all different forms of abuse. abuse.
No, that's right, and that's why before we spoke about psychological abuse and emotional abuse. I mean, that occurs quite a lot, and that's really big, and that's one of the big parts of it. And speaking to victims of family violence, a lot of them say that they can get over the beating that may occur once every 6 months, but it's that emotional and psychological abuse that occurs constantly that they can't get over. So that actually has a bigger effect on people.
What kinds of things do people do to hide this? I mean, there's obviously, well, when in the sense of a physical abuse, there's going to be marks and so forth. So what kind of things do people do to try and hide it? Are there constant excuses? I mean, I'm thinking from a friendship or somebody, a work colleague, and you think something's happening.
Yeah, look, there's always that common one that I fell over or I hit my head on the side of the door or just sort of covering up of how the injury has occurred. But you also find with the emotional abuse and the psychological abuse, that may often come out with work, that their productivity has lost, fallen at work. They take a lot of days off work. They have to leave certain jobs. They're always in sort of low-paying casual jobs because they have to keep continually leaving the job so they don't, people don't find out what's occurring. Karen, can you offer any others?
Yeah, I think often clinically there's actually not a lot of difference between how people present in terms of being victims of family violence. So often you may not know, and they don't come to a service saying, I'm a victim of family violence, but they're turning up talking about shame, talking about blame, often with symptoms of depression, if not even having a clinical diagnosis. Very, very low self-esteem, lack of confidence. They start to withdraw from friends, withdraw from social outings, social gatherings, family functions, so that no one knows exactly what goes on. So not only do they feel isolated, but they isolate themselves, which makes the situation five times worse.
So something like maybe someone else controlling the finances or not letting them out or telling them what to wear or not to wear, that in itself might not be perceived as abuse by that person, but obviously it manifests in the sort of behaviours that you're talking about, Karen.
And I think we can all think within in networks of people that we know where we've seen couples where we just think there's an unequal power balance here, and power and control, as it is in the heterosexual community, it can is also behind the issues with LGBTI domestic violence. And so we know those sorts of things are going on, so it really is about trying to get to those.
And we're aware of there being a cycle of violence, and it's why people often tend to stay in relationships, apart from being afraid to leave. People, the offenders of family violence generally act out, whether it be physical or emotional or the other types of violence we've been talking about, and then they apologise and they'll say that they'll never do it again, and then they're really, really sweet and nice to the partner, which makes them want to stay, and that the partner will think, okay, well, it's okay now, things are going to get better, but they don't. It just goes around and around, and it generally gets worse and worse until you're in a situation where you can be extremely seriously physically assaulted, and it can even end up in death.
What's really interested me is when you actually touched on and you said that they don't even know that it's domestic violence. Is that really common? Because you would kind of think that you go, hang on, I'm being somethinged, whatever that is, and you go for help. But actually these people are going for help in a way they might be feeling sad, or they might be feeling it's actually something happening with them rather than what's happening to them.
Yep. And generally just feeling unwell all the time, or tired or sad or any of those sorts of things. And, or often they may even come to us just saying we have problems in our relationships. And we, you know, we do a lot of work around talking to people about their relationships, their communication patterns, how they decide, how they negotiate things, those sorts of things. And, you know, it's quite often just as simple as asking people, what are your fights like? Do you end up turfing things at each other? How heated does it get? Does someone throw a tantrum and leave the room? Those sorts of things. So it is really critical for a mainstream service like ours has a very definite queer community service program. And so we make sure that we provide a safe physical space, acknowledging the relationships, but also acknowledging some of the issues.
So, I mean, I know it's hard to talk numbers, but I mean, there's been a couple of surveys around. I know that the Australian Research Centre in Sex Health and Society did one in 2006, Australia wide, and then Gay and Lesbian Health Victoria, another one at the end of 2008. And both of those sort of reported about a third of the respondents saying that they'd been in a relationship where there was either physical or verbal abuse. Now, my guess is that that's probably an underestimate.
For sure.
Is that your experience, all of you?
Look, I'll go for that. Definitely, I'd say under, and it's certainly very underreported. We're sort of looking at around about 20% of the GLBTI community report family violence. So, look, we're probably missing, you know, 40 or 30 or 40,000 reports a year. So that's why we're out here to try and encourage people to report them.
And the problem is, within that cycle of violence, their behaviour becomes normal to the victim. And so they don't think that anything is wrong. They think that, well, this is the way life is, this is the way my partner treats me, and I'm just going to accept it. And it's not something that, as a community or any community, that we should accept. If we're in a relationship with someone, it should be happy, it should be good and positive.
I actually want to touch on something we haven't spoken about, and all the things that I've read. What about children? When we're talking about family violence,
yeah.
is there often cases where kids are brought in and they're actually saying, this is happening to me, or is it caught up as a side note? Do you know what I mean? Like, it's found out afterwards, whereas perhaps the mum or one of the mums have come in.
Definitely when police attend an address and there are children there, they will try and speak to the children as long as the children are old enough. But also under the new Family Violence Protection Act, if children hear, see or witness family violence, it's deemed that they're actually affected by the family violence, so they can be put on the intervention orders, so they have some form of protection. And it doesn't only affect them just by seeing it, it'll affect their schoolwork, it could affect their behaviour, it could have long-term effects over their life, they could have troubles making relationships, they could see the violence occurring, so they just think that's normal, so then it just goes generational. So it certainly can have a huge effect on children, and it starts from the time the child's in the womb. We often realise that that's the first time family violence actually starts, when the woman's pregnant.
And I think, like you're saying, that's the perception that they grow up with, and they could quite relatively continue that cycle. Have you found that in your counselling?
Yeah, I was just going to say that like we see within heterosexual relationships, children are even used as weapons in terms of the power and the coercion around parenting issues and a whole range of things. And as Di said, what we tend to find is that the focus on people having babies is so often about, you know, the huff and puff classes and, you know, getting through the pregnancy and the breastfeeding. Very little is actually done to actually talk to couples about how your relationship is actually going to change the moment you have this baby in your world. And it really is a lot of shifts in the intimate partner relationship. So we're doing a project at the moment which is just about parents couples who are transitioning to parenthood, to get them to think about what is the effect of having a baby on our relationship, and what are the sorts of things we want to pass on to our children about gender, about happy, equal, healthy relationships, those sorts of things.
It's Community Safety Month, and we're talking with Gabby, Acting Sergeant Manager of the Gay and Lesbian Advisory Unit, Sergeant Di Ashwell, a Family Violence Advisor, and Karen Field from the Drummond Street Relationship Centre. We've been talking about family violence.
It's scary and interesting at the same time, and we do have a text in asking, can teens abuse parents?
They certainly can. When we're talking about family violence, we're talking about all members of a family, so not just parent on parent. So siblings can assault siblings and grandparents, and often there are siblings that do assault their parents.
And you also got to look at the elder abuse these days, where older adults, children, abuse their parents, and also police go to around about 13% of incidents where children are the actual perpetrators.
That's really interesting. Sorry.
That's
right. No, I just want to share the microphone with you. Your turn.
I was going to ask Di about what happens when a police officer, police officers go to an incident. What sort of role do they take?
Okay, well, police, every time they're called to a family violence incident, they will attend it. They always make sure they have to take a report at every incident they go to. Then they look at actually what occurs. So it might be a referral, so they'll make a referral, and they'll make a referral like to Drummond Street Relationship Centre. If there's criminal offences involved, they'll go down those lines of investigating the criminal offences. And we may look at taking intervention orders out and the new ones, which are family violence safety notices. And that's where we can actually exclude a perpetrator from a house for up to 72 hours.
So it's not like the movies where you see the police go, oh, just a domestic, and then they sort of, you know, walk off into the sunset looking for something more exciting to deal with.
Definitely not. Look, domestics are a huge part of our work these days too. In some stations it's, you know, 70 or 80% of their workload. So we certainly must do something about it when we go there, that's for sure.
And those statistics tell you how prevalent it is in all of our societies.
What about on a counselling level? Do you have to report everything that comes in? I mean, people might feel, oh, gee, I want to say something, but I'm scared of what could happen because of that.
Yeah, and it really is on a case-by-case basis. I mean, obviously, if we're talking about adults, we certainly encourage people who are experiencing domestic violence To report to the police. However, we're not going to turn someone away because they don't want to. I'm far more interested in getting them into services, helping to work with them around that this is not okay, they don't need to put up with it, and how might we support them and how might we put in place safety plans to help them leave or get out of a situation when they really, really need to. The other thing is also is that often couples come because they recognise that the violence has occurred. And it's frightening for both the abuser and the victim, and people don't want to split up, and we have to deal with it. It's no good us saying, well, we only see victims here or we see abusers there. These are couples, these are families, sometimes they have children. We have to do something. So, you know, we attempt to see them individually and try and work out how are we best going to work with the abuser, how are we best going to work with the victim, and how are we going to make sure that that the violence stops.
I was going to say, Karen, it'd probably be quite useful for abusers to work on their set of behaviours and their issues as well as the person that is deemed to be the victim. So yep. If someone's listening out there and feels that they're in an abusive relationship as either someone who is abusing or as a victim, what do you suggest the first step to take would be?
I'd say if it's male victims, I mean, I think Men's Helpline particularly is really good, and I think gay men find it more useful to ring there than they would, obviously, often the domestic violence helplines and those sorts of things, because they're more geared towards women as victims. Women can certainly ring those as services, or we're certainly happy to take referrals directly from women and do, because we are a service that specialises in this community.
So if there's also a critical incident, can people just talk to their GLO, their Gay and Lesbian Liaison Officer, Gabby?
Yeah, they can definitely contact a GLO, but if something is serious and occurring right now, you really should call 000 and get the police there straight away. And we really do find that a large percentage of times we attend family violence incidents, it's not because the victim has called us, it's because a child has called us or a neighbour or someone walking by has called because they're concerned for the safety of the person inside the house. So it's the victims that aren't calling us, and we really need to stop that cycle of violence. If you're ever going to feel safe anywhere, we should be able to feel safe in our own home.
Absolutely right.
Exactly. Now, there's a Walk Against Violence coming up on Thursday, November the 26th from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. and it's Walk Against Family Violence around Albert Park Lake. And people can...
Do you need to register?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yes, you do. You can register at walkagainstviolence2009.hotmail.com, I believe.
She did that very well, didn't she?
I think she just made it up.
No.
I'm pretty sure that's right.
It is. walkagainstviolence2009@hotmail.com. So send them an email if you're interested in walking against that, because I think there's just been so many incidents, particularly lately it seems to me, violent incidents, that something's happening out there.
And we're inviting everyone to come down and be involved in that, and we really want to include the GLBTR community to come down and support this Walk Against Violence.
So we'd like to thank Gabby, Di Ashwell and Karen Field for coming in this evening to talk about domestic violence and for all the work that the police has been putting into Community Safety Month and your participation here at Joy.
Thank you, and please stop being victims.
Thank you. Just going to say your last bit of advice, but you've stolen my pants there.
Sorry, well, we don't have to put up with violence, and especially within our own home. We don't say no to violence. Do something about it, whether contact the police or contact other agencies.
Talk and report.
We are talking about domestic violence, so we've got Gabby. We said, Gabby, you're not allowed to leave. Your text came in last. Gabby, the question is, does violence help include the non-physical? That's from Ken.
Yeah, just physical violence is not the worst form of violence. All forms of violence are as bad as each other, and sometimes it's the mental assaults, like the problems and the after effects of mental violence that affect people most. So yes, contact police about any form of violence. If there's no physical assault, it doesn't mean we're not going to act on it. They really are as bad as each other. And you can contact a GLO. You can speak to a GLO for advice and just to talk to us. And really, if you're not sure if it is family violence, you can talk to us and we can explain it to you. But you can also just
contact the police, any police station, and report it and speak to anyone at a police station. But as I was saying, if you are uncomfortable going to the police, that's what the GLOW is for.
Yeah, and they are a great service. So thank you for that text and thank you for answering that.
Can I go now?
Yeah, I'll let you go now.
Thank you.
Except you didn't take me out for dinner, so I'm very cross with you. Okay, we're about to talk to somebody very exciting. Not that Gabby... Well, okay, Gabby was a little bit exciting. We have a new editor on the scene. We have the new Lottl editor, Cess, is joining us all the way from... Where are you, Cess?
I'm in Sydney.
You're in Sydney yeah. having a lovely time, aren't you? And we're here stuck in the studio.
Oh.
Tell us about your new role, because you've taken over the chair at Lottl.
Yes, well, I'm not sure if you know, Silva and Merrin have started a new publication called Bound.
Yeah, it looks interesting.
We read about that.
So it was obviously a little bit too much for Merrin to continue to tackle both titles, so she was concentrating on focusing and launching Bound. So the opportunity came up for Lottl to have a new editor. I just submitted an application and I was the lucky one that got the job.
Well, you've got an amazing resume. Your background is film and TV. You've been on stage. You've done heaps of writing and for assorted magazines and so forth.
Yeah, that's true.
But you've also got a claim to fame about sharing a cocktail with someone.
Yes, Angelina Jolie. I've actually shared a few drinks with quite a few different people, but that's probably the one that would most appeal to the listeners.
Cess, would you like to be my best friend?
So how did that happen?
It was quite a few years ago, actually, when she was out here. It was her first big movie, Bone Collector. It was the first movie that she'd had her name above the title, and they'd brought her out to do a big publicity tour. And I'd gone to the hotel to do an interview, and we'd actually really got along really well. And she wanted to go for a ride on my bike afterwards. And unfortunately,
I assume that's a motorbike.
Waiting, yeah.
Because bicycles are a bit naff to have Angelina Jolie on your handlebars.
No, because I'd brought my helmet up to the interview with me, so she, of course,
cool.
She's a bit of a motorbike head herself, and she was like, oh, can you take me for a ride? And I was like, you know what, my girlfriend's waiting outside for me, and we've already been talking 40 minutes longer than my allocated interview time. And so she was pretty fuming by then, but I said, you know, maybe we can meet up later if you're going to have dinner or drinks or whatever. And so we ended up, but I knew the publicist quite well, so we ended up going out for dinner and, you know, having drinks and stuff.
Wait a minute. I'm sorry, did I just hear that you turned down taking Angelina Jolie for a ride? Isn't there rules about that? You know, the whole kind
it's
of...
It's the don't do rule.
No, I'm sure my girlfriend would be like, what, you turned down taking Angelina Jolie for a ride? Yeah. Go for it.
Yeah.
Jeez.
That's no.
Type, so.
I think dinner and cocktail sounds better. Cess, you've got an amazing resume. You've been involved in a number of publications. How do you think your experience is going to impact on Lottl?
I guess what I'm hoping is I can add some of my art and music kind of contacts to help broaden the expanse of the magazine, I guess, because I've been doing music and theatre and film stuff for such a long time. I know quite a few people in the industry and I get offered a lot of interviews, so hopefully I'll be able to kind of shoot some of them Lottl's way as well, which will make it, in terms of the film, theatre, music side, it might make it a bigger read for people rather than just having, you know, small newsy bits or whatever. We might be able to offer them a few kind of cool exclusive features every now and then, which
wow.
I think would be good.
Like hot famous chicks. That sounds appealing to me. That gets my readership even more dedicated.
You're already in the studio with two hot famous chicks, Nicola.
Oh, sorry.
Three.
Sorry.
Are you going to continue the theme about having issues relating to particular themes? Because this month you're actually doing the travel issue. So is that something you're going to continue or do you see that changing?
Yeah, I'd say we'll kind of stick with how things are in terms of the themes for at least for the most part at the moment, just because, you know, I haven't ever edited an LGBT magazine before. You know, I've got to find out about the readership more and make myself more familiar with what the readers like in terms of of Lottl and...
We like hot checks.
You know what I really like? I like the thing in The Age where they've got two people and they said they have...
Oh,
they
I met, love that.
I the, love the that. We need to do that in Lottl.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I'll be close.
Where they have two people. They're not necessarily in a relationship. There's two people that friends are a friendship or an family. Association and how they met and their impressions of each other.
Isn't it called right. Two of
It's
us?
Really interesting and their perspective of what they thought of each other and their relationship. That's really interesting. So that's my little two cents for the Lottl. Do you think?
Yeah, I do think that's a good idea. It was something I actually... Because I write for the Music Network as well, which is like the trade magazine for the music industry. That's one of the kind of things I've pitched at them as well, but kind of from the terms of, you know, a manager and the band.
Oh.
Yeah.
Nicola just can't get past the handling.
Yeah, I'm a bit stunned in this thing.
Normally we can't shut her up, but this time she's just gobsmacked in the microphone.
I've got images of me with
she's
on a motorbike. Yeah, I've got me on a motorbike with her in the back. It's yeah, my mind's kind of gone somewhere else.
Being the older and wiser member of the crew here, Cess, I'll ask a you know a sensible question. the current readership of Lottl, you said you want to find out some more information. You've got any clues about how you might access that information? I know we've been inundated with surveys from all sorts of quarters and organisations recently. Are you going to do a survey or try and suss it out?
Yeah, well, I know the girls have done a survey not that long ago, so I'm going to pore over that for some time. And I think I'm looking at back issues and stuff and just getting a feel for how the magazine, because, you know, people are adverse to change a lot of times, so it's already a big change that Meryn's gone and I'm stepping in. So I think I'll take a little bit of a softly approach maybe to begin with before I exert any giant changes on the magazine, but I certainly will hope to include more.
Cess, before you go, we have an idea for you because we are three very hot chicks.
Yeah.
And, you know, look, you know, you could do Women in the Media and, you know, we might be available to meet with you and Angelina, you know, at any given second.
Hear me roar in the roar.
We were looking for some ladies for the December cover. So
you are on.
You're right.
I'm
you going to put your bikinis on.
Oh, that's me gone.
No, I'm just going to put my Father Christmas outfit on, actually.
We should do a show like that. Thanks for talking to us, Cess, and good luck in your new role.
Thank you. My pleasure talking to you.
Look forward to the
enjoy
next
the rest of your night. Thanks.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
She turned down Angelina.
No, she turned her down for a ride, so to speak.
What? Look at Nicola.
Come on. Who turns down going for a ride with Angelina?
I reckon she's on pee plates and was embarrassed.
Yeah. Well, but, you know, Angelina goes, hey, do you want to go for a ride?
Yeah. Yes.
Hello.
All right.
In her Lara Croft outfit.
She's taking it to the next level.
Nice.
But if I had Angelina or Ellen, I'd go Ellen.
Can I have them both?
Yes.
I'll get a sidecar.
That's a girl for you. You've been listening to Hear Me Roar on Joy 94.9. It's been lovely sharing our time with you, and we'll be back next week.
Bye.
Bye. Have a good night.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.